Om Shanti. Good morning. Today's topic is perhaps one very important aspect of keeping our self-respect. We know it's very precious. In fact, in all of these years, I don't think I've ever talked to anyone that was going through some difficulty. And you couldn't find at the basis of it some lack of self-respect. Not getting translation? What about these ones here? They're a little bit restless. Not working? What about Portuguese? Not working? So Portuguese is not working and Tamil is not working. We need some help from the translation people. But they don't have FM sets. Portuguese only on FM. Has anyone got an FM set that they can lend to these two sisters here? What about Tamil? Tamil working? Okay. So Portuguese is 100. Okay. So I don't think I've talked to anyone in all of these years that was going through some difficulty and you couldn't find at the base of it some lack of a sense of self-value. Self-value and self-worth is the same thing. So how much are you worth? Huh? To yourself? To the world, to your family, to God? Do you have a sense of worth? Because that's really very foundational to the way we look at ourselves. So I want you to go through a little bit of a journey. Think of the last 12 months. Some high points, some low points. Just think about it. And you'll find that, yes, you did interesting things and you did some things that you perhaps shouldn't have done. But at the basis of that, there is a sort of a belief about what you're able to do and what you're able to achieve. And this one aspect, I suppose, that we don't take up very much. We talk about faith, but not necessarily about belief. Because in fact, we're exactly where we've believed ourselves to be. What we believe about our possibilities, what we believe about our talents, what we believe about our capacity to understand, all of those things come together and they are at the basis of exactly where we are. For example, it's very difficult to have a sense of value if we're not able to value even our own thinking. And with most of us, me included, our minds are not 100% stable, right? Especially when something happens. We're still taking time to adjust to circumstances. You know, we maybe in the past we take 6 months and then we take a month and then we take a week and then we take a day and then we take an hour, 5 minutes, 1 minute to make an adjustment to a new situation for which we were not prepared. Someone treats us badly, someone criticizes us, something that we wanted to happen didn't happen. some plan that we invested a lot of our time, money and energy in just fell apart. Well, we started it, but we didn't have the courage or the energy or the enthusiasm to see it through. So all of those things, if you go down to the very deep, deep, deep inner state, you'll find that there's a belief there. And I guess self-belief is what you tell yourself about yourself. And believing in others is what you tell yourself about others. And mostly those beliefs are somehow like, I guess, excuses. I'll give an example, you know. I have difficulties in interacting with others because there's a basic belief that I have that others are incompetent and I'm okay. For example, that will make every single interaction with others very difficult. Because I've believed, for example, that I'm more intelligent or more capable than others. And on the other side of the coin, for example, I just become impressed by others and what others can do and what others can say. And at the basis of that, I believe that I'm not as good as anyone else, you know. Everyone else, I try, but, you know, I'm still at the mercy of my past. And so if we, you know, Nina, there's a game that sometimes you see in some presentations that, let's say you get $100 bill, right? No matter what you do with it, you can screw it up, you can stamp on it, you can, you know, even maybe tear it in half and then stick the two pieces together again. You can still change it in the bank. But no matter what you do with that bill, it will continue to have the same value. You can exchange it. It's written there. This will be exchanged for the value of. Now, you look at yourself, if you can keep that sense of self-worth, no matter what happens, your value continues to be the same. If the world screws you up, or the world stamps on you, or the world criticizes you, or defames you, or tears you apart, you still continue to have that sense of worth. Now, why this topic came up is because Baba says and uses a phrase that I confess that it's quite difficult to understand. This whole idea of becoming worship worthy of worship. I mean, it's such a strange concept from I guess even in India, because we've been so used to just worshipping and bowing down and venerating and, you know, putting good things up and ourselves down as we do it, that the whole idea of becoming worthy of the worship of others is so strange for our intellects. And Baba says, even in the last Muli, you have to become worship worthy. And even the five stages that we're supposed to practice every day, one of them is our worship-worthy stage. So here we are trying to project ourselves into a future where we see ourselves with all of those qualities that we've been running after, basically. And I have the qualities that previously I used to pay reverence to, venerate. I used to put up on the altar. The whole thing of worship and devotion is putting something higher than yourself and putting yourself down at the same time. And I suppose even to an extent, and Baba has mentioned it many times, just being impressed by someone. You know, you can appreciate someone's value, but that doesn't mean that your value has changed because their value you're seeing. So the whole crux of where we are is what we believe about ourselves. What is my self-belief? Then there are limiting beliefs, like I wouldn't be able to, you know, my health's not good enough, or everyone's selfish, therefore what's the problem with me being a little bit selfish? You know, all of those little beliefs are there at the basis of the way we think. And if we can't trust the way we think, how can we respect ourselves? Not possible. So just look at your own thinking. Is your thinking trustworthy? And the whole question then comes around, for example, in this particular birth, at this particular time, God's vision has come over us, and therefore there's some expectation, you know. There is a sense of being special, but it's for a special reason. You know, by God's vision has been cast over us, and the feeling that, you know, Baba's looking at us, I suppose later on becomes this idea that God is watching you, you know. God's sitting on the top of the door watching you sin, sort of idea that comes later on in on the path of devotion. He's writing down, you know, later on the big doomsday book comes out, and on the 23rd of July of that particular you did that, so, you know. And of course you feel very uncomfortable about it, but the whole idea that God's vision has been cast over us at this particular time for a very special task. And that's central. That's absolutely central to whatever we do now. So if I move away from that vision, it's because I believe perhaps that I don't deserve it, you know. It's not worship worthy is later on, but what am I worthy of now? Am I worthy of that vision? Am I doing the things accordingly? For example, I don't know about you, but getting up in Amrit Vale, especially after a hard night, you know, or you go to bed late or something, you do feel tired, but the first thought that comes up in my mind is, well, how can I be worthy if I don't get up? So it's how can I be worthy of Baba's trust if I don't do the things that he would like me to do? How can I be worthy of Baba's vision if I'm treating this person in this particular way, and so on? So very, very central to our belief system is what we feel we are worthy of. What do I deserve? You know? You can make the lists. It's always easy to make lists, you know. Your relationships, for example. Think about your difficult relationships. Think about a particularly difficult relationship. Do you have one? Your favorite difficult person? Yeah? So what do you believe about that person? And what do you believe about yourself in relation to that person? And you'll see it's exactly that belief which continues to perpetuate the difficulty. It will continue until you change the seed of it, right? And the seed is the belief. So, you know, if faith is the basis of victory, belief is the basis of faith, in a sense. And the whole question of how people see us, you know, just going into it, unless we are avyakt. And avyak means to be in a stage where you're really a detached observer, therefore completely objective. That's the only time that we are truly objective. If we're not avyak, we are not objective. Not possible. Because we're caught up in our own story. We're caught up in our own acts. We're caught up between yesterday, today and tomorrow, or last week and next week. You know, we're caught up in the story that's moving forward. And there we are, you know, I mean, do this, and, you know, I've got to meet someone at 10 o'clock, and then I've got to go here, and then I've got to do this, and then, you know. In that sort of tunnel of perception, like a very limited tunnel of perception, we're not ever objective, basically. We're just being moved forward by circumstance, in a sense. I mean, in service can just be a substitute for whatever we did before, in many ways. We were running around before, now we're running around doing service. We were going here and there before, now we're going here and there, you know. We were answering emails before, now we're answering emails now. So what is it that is actually changing? Is there a sense of change? Is there a sense of progress? Is there a sense, therefore, of worth? Is my sense of value, you know, low and continuous, or is my sense of value somehow increasing as I come to know more and more about myself? And it's such a prison, you know, this subjective tunnel of perception that we sort of, you know, it's such a prison. Because when I look at someone from that perspective, actually, for example, I don't see that person. I see my version of the person. I was talking to someone yesterday and he was asking me, how is it possible to be less sensitive? You know? And why are we affected by others? It's because, again, we believe that that person can give us something that we don't have or that we want. You know? I only will suffer from those people from whom I want something. But that person, when I see them in that consciousness, I don't see them. I don't see you, I see my you, in a sense. And again, that person not seeing me, seeing his me, or her me, is really strange, no? So I'm with my you and you're with your me. We're trying to communicate. It's absolutely impossible to understand really someone's universe unless we're, you know, that higher level of vibration that is in the avyak stage. That's how the daddies, you know, they're so great masters of adjusting themselves to their audience, whoever's in front of them. Because there is a common ground where you can make everyone feel comfortable. Now, if I am just stuck in my own little prison of perception, in a sense, and I interact with someone from that point of view, that person will not understand, maybe will be hurt, maybe will be shocked or surprised, or, you know, certainly there'll be some, you know, clang, you know, some noise, some jarring effect, like that. And as we go back to the, you know, our references, the only reliable reference really is Baba. Even our daddies will tell us that. So however great they have been, where did they get their greatness from also? However great they are. So my objective is to, you know, move towards that. and feel that, actually. If the cause of the daddy's greatness is Baba, and I'm seeing their worth, I'm seeing their value, I should move myself into that sphere so that I can also bring out that greatness. And as we, I guess, move along, I'm so convinced that the wisdom that Baba wants us to have is really being able to have such an unshakable stage, right? No matter what happens, I have such a sense of self-worth that, you know, it just blows over me. Yesterday we were having a chat about how Daddy, somehow, especially with certain souls that she feels that she has a right over, because therefore she can say what she feels in a very open and honest way, Daddy and Janky I'm talking about. It's good if Daddy is frank and open with you. When Daddy starts to be diplomatic with you, well, she's feeling that you're a little bit sensitive, and therefore you can't take the full feeling that she's trying to pass to you. But even if Daddy, you know, does pull your ears, and even, I mean, the last couple of weeks, even in the class, Baba, Daddy, you know, you should do this, you should have done that. I feel that it's, I must admit at the time, you know, I said, what's going on here? But you see, I understand that my value is my value, and Daddy's trying to help me to understand that even more, which is great. So fantastic. So who are we? Let's do a little check here. Look at your present state. The last month or so, have you been going up? Have you been going down? Or have you been just going ahead? What do you think? Let's see your hands, come on. Up? Really up? This much? This much? This much? Okay. Hail Baba. I didn't see, some people didn't put their hand up, so you're not going anywhere, is it? Okay, second question. This is a deep question. Do I really know what Baba wants me to do? Or am I just following my own inclinations? See, the world has become what it has because everyone's just been following their own inclinations. In fact, there's a very good definition of sanskars, propensity, where you incline towards. So our sanskars give us a certain weight and direction, and we move accordingly. And so, am I in the place that is the best place for me to be? Doing the best thing that I should be doing? Or have I invented something else? And therefore, now I'm a little bit out of You know, a train goes along the tracks. Imagine a train slightly off the track but still going along. Wouldn't be a very easy ride. So am I on track? And this, of course, requires a certain, you know, tuning in. Even Baba says that as the end time approaches, the only way, the only communication that will work is our clear intellect, the connection, you know, the touching. We have some experiences of this, you know. Even last night, I've been staying at Pandav Bhavan, and Charlie was going to give me a lift, and he came up and said, I can't take you, I've got to do something else. So, okay, fine. And it was already 9:30 or so. No more buses. It was after that. So I walked along to the transport. I need to go to Pandav Bhavan. And exactly at that instant, a car came by, you know, to take me to Pandav Bhavan. Are you going there? Yes, I'm going. Okay, let's go. So you see, even to that extent, there's a feeling of just being moved around. So, am I where I'm supposed to be, doing what I'm supposed to be doing, or have I invented something else along the way? There's if I follow my own inclinations, I'll probably end up away from things. So how close am I to the family? How close am I to the drishti of the seniors? And therefore, how close am I to the drishti of Baba? These are the questions that we can check our value. Of course, it should have some practical result. Baba says a diamond cannot remain hidden. So if we're polishing up our stage, then things will tend to happen around us rather than us having to rush here and there. There's something that I'd like to talk about too. Is our real aim and object? What is it? Where are we going? When we listen to all of this incredible knowledge, how to translate that really? Okay, we've got our notebooks full of incredible points. But how to translate that into, you know, the practical day-to-day reality? And there should be a feeling that what I'm doing is worthwhile. What I'm doing is interesting, incredible. Even to the extent that, okay, how many of you have families, mothers? How many of you are mothers or fathers? Hand up. Okay. So, majority actually. So there should be a feeling that the way you're living with the people that you live with is worthwhile. There's a sense of, you know, you're extracting value out of it as well. Because you know your own value. Something that has value attracts value. And so you'll be able to extract that sort of value from the things around you. So you should feel great that this is one of the field of service that I have. Okay, how many of you have Lokic work, profession? Okay. Even housework. How many of you have housework? Even the same ones actually, right? How many of you have servers work? Okay, keep your hand up. I'll keep on asking questions. So there are a lot of things to do, right? But there's only one thing to be. Right? Do you understand that? I've got a lot of things to do, but only one thing to be. I have to be worthy. I have to have a sense of value. I have to increase my sense of value. And in doing that, the things organize themselves better around me. And you can be a victim of your life. You can be a protagonist of your life. You can live in a circle of worry, or you can live in a circle of influence. The choice is yours. That's what all of us hear. So am I calling the shots, or are the shots calling me? Do I have a sense of orchestration, or I'm just being orchestrated on by people and events? So as my value increases, my sense of value, my experience of value increases, I will have definitely a sense that things are just coming, you know, nicely. Everything is adopting its right position with relation to me. It's like the basis of everything. Everything has, I suppose, an original state, even matter. Yeah? Everything and everyone has an original state. So as I come down to that, what I'm actually doing, and why I guess God needs the sort of help that human beings can give for the world to change, he requires us to change. And if we don't change, the world will not change. So how many of us have that feeling that when we go into that incorporeal stage, we're actually having an effect on everything and everyone? Because in that state, there's no distance between anything. Yeah. All of the souls and in that dimension are in the same place. So therefore, if I go into an incorporeal state, I touch everyone. A little bit, but I do touch everyone. And I touch perhaps matter as well, the elements. They're sort of waiting to get back to their own original state, I suppose. So imagine then the value of meditation if I really understood it. I'm not just meditating to feel good or I'm not just meditating to sort out some problems that I've got with my own sanskars which are making difficulties for others. But I'm meditating to really help every single soul and the elements of matter. So how valuable is the meditation experience? And this is our big, I suppose, challenge. How to generate that sense of worth that keeps me stable in the face of any sort of situation, you know. Generally, when something happens, we can notice a reaction, right? In a discussion, this is the feeling that I have to have the last word. I have to get my feelings across. I have to tell these people that I really am a valuable person, so stop treating me like I wasn't, you know. But I'm convinced, especially, and now I'd like to share some experiences that I've had over the last couple of weeks here in Madhuban. I've been involved in a small group of people. Over the last few months, we organized the first, meeting between the senior people in India, not just the senior daddies and dadas, but the zones in charges in India, the people responsible for each state or each zone in India, and special, I would say, experts in different fields that are really helping the institution from India and abroad. First time this ever happened. When we started planning it, we didn't imagine that Daddyji wouldn't be there. But it so happened that it was like the first event in Daddy Janki's, you know, state of being in charge, you know, the administrative head of the institution. So it was like the first chance, I suppose. And because of that, I had to get in very close contact with certain individuals in the Yagya, with a small group. And it's been such an incredible revelation of how things really run. And it really, the more I look at it, and you've probably seen it yourself, there are so many things that don't seem logical. But they don't seem illogical either. Because there's absolutely no organization that you can compare with this one. So things I've been telling myself, that things here are logical, you know. They don't come into the, you know. And how Baba from the beginning made such an investment in the value of these souls, in the worth of these souls, build on, you know, just created a sense of worth and a sense of worth and a sense of worth. And, you know, 70 odd years later, those souls are such powerhouses. And everything is based on that reality, I suppose. When we hear things like royalty is reality. I mean, I don't know if you're like me, but I can't get my head around that. What's the relationship between reality and royalty? Couldn't. Now I'm starting to understand after 30 years what that means, you know. Because when there is real value, that's it. Reality, royalty, real value. The highest state is the most real state. The highest state is a state in which we have the qualities that previously we used to venerate and worship. And that is real. And as I'm seeing the inner workings of this incredible institution, many of us are just like skimming the surface, and we see the ripples and the little mistakes. But if you go down deep, the foundation is so absolutely solid that nothing, really nothing, can shake it. Daddyji, Brahma Baba left the body, there were 125 centers. Now there are 8,500 in 100 countries, plus activities in another 29. And look, Daddy Janki takes over. Which other organization has a, you know, when there's a change of chieftainship, whatever you call it, the change of head, you appoint a 92-year-old woman to do it with an organization that has... Is that logical? Not logical. But looking at that, it's absolutely not illogical either. So what is it? It's illogical. It's beyond logic. You can't use comparisons. So you look at the institution and the value that it's created because of that incredible belief, right? Collective belief. Imagine how much energy is being fed into that. I mean, just we are here visitors. We don't live here in India, the majority anyway. And we come here it's nice and especially different from the rest of India. It's a nice place to be, good vibration and all, and fantastic. But you go down deep, you'll see that the foundation is so, so, so solid because there's a collective sense of self-worth that we don't need to do anything to prove what it is. And people come in, wow, wow, wow. So on an individual level, I have to be a sort of a walking individual yajna, in a sense. Am I as solid as this institution? Am I the rock also? It doesn't matter what happens, it just grows. It just goes, it just creates an impact, a positive impact on others. So I need to work on myself. And in fact, I've started to understand that, really what they talk about when the whole is just is more than the sum of the parts, the holistic type of approach. As much as I individually am a yajna, I'm really, really helping Baba in his task. That means I become a sacrificial fire. The fire of my enthusiasm keeps burning, and I'm feeding it every single day. I'm just feeding my inner fire, let's say, with this very, very strong sense of belief in the worth, first of all, of what Baba's giving me in terms of knowledge. And secondly, what Baba's given me in terms of sakash, the energy. And thirdly, what Baba's giving me in terms of drishti, right? And what Baba's given me in terms of blessings. Am I taking it all? Because it's certainly available. It's available, right? Am I availing myself of it? So when I start feeling not so good, what's happened? I've forgotten that all this is very valuable. And then I'm complaining that I'm not feeling good, and it's like being locked in a cupboard in a dark room with all of the windows shut and complaining that there's no sunlight, Because you have to go out of all of that to see it. We lose so much when we start to compare ourselves. In fact, conflict, if you think about it, only happens when there's comparison. In which I feel that something is better or worse than me. And in fact, nothing is either better or worse than anyone else. Who is special here in this room? Hand up. Yeah? Special? Very special? Very, very, very special? Yeah? But who is more special than anyone else? One person, two people. You're more special than every single other person in the room. Ah, that's a dangerous thought. You are a million times fortunate. Yes. But you can't say, well, I'm a million times fortunate. You're only 800,000 times fortunate, you know. Then when you start to compare, you start to lose your value. It's a copper age sanskar, you know. Comparison. It's like everyone goes to the market, you know, sets up their individual stall, which is actually selling yourself, right? Everyone's in the market selling themselves, right? And then you look at the prices of the others. Well, that one's charging this much. I think I can charge this much and get away with it. So we show ourselves, we show our wares, and there we are, you know, set up in the marketplace of life, waiting for our customers. And if no customers come, sniff, sniff. If someone buys more things from the other person, oh, what do I have to do? I need some more marketing here, right? I need to you know, brush up my self-image so that others can, you know, recognize how terribly important and good I am. But you can't never for you. It's like if you sell something, like say you buy a car, and it's so shiny and so nice, and then you look under the bonnet and there's no motor, you know. You bought something very nice on the outside, but there's nothing, it won't work. And if something works, that's enough. So if I am working in the way that I'm supposed to, I don't need to worry about what others perceive my value to be. Because definitely all suffering is in the exchange, in the human exchange that we call relationships. The exchange rates are not good today, so I lost a whole lot yesterday, you know. Better do something to attract that person's attention. I better do something so that they notice that I exist. Baba said once that some souls go to the center and there they are sitting in the corner doing something for hours and nobody notices them. And they say, well, they don't even offer me a cup of tea. You know? So, the thing is that if I work on what I'm supposed to be doing and I'm looking at my self-worth and value and I've become a yajna myself, in a sense. The fire is burning, the sacrifice is happening, and I don't need to do anything more. Then we've moved away from, you know, yesterday or the day before we were talking to Bridge Mohanbhai, and he was talking about politics. He's the coordinator of the political wing. And he was saying, you know, how politicians are internally and what they try to do externally, you know. They try to, make out that their value is much more than they really are. Yeah? And we try to do the opposite. We work on our self-value and that's enough. It's impossible to hide self-value. He gave an example of a refrigerator. And we invented a refrigerator supposedly to keep food fresh. But in fact, we use a refrigerator to eat stale food. Right? Right? We keep the food there in the days when they didn't have refrigerators, they'd make enough food to last a day, right? Some people make food to last a week. I don't know if there's any Brahmins that do that. They make, I've heard of stories of Brahmins, they cook rice for a whole week and and they just portion it out, and you know they've had experiments with rats that they eat reheated food. They last half the time of people that eat freshly cooked stuff. Rats that eat freshly cooked stuff. So you see, what things are supposed to be, they're being used for something else. That was the message of the vision. That what people are supposed to be doing, they're actually doing something else. And they're trying to make out they're really doing what they're supposed to be doing. So I can't play that game. All I have to do is to do what I'm supposed to do. And that requires real deep self-recognition, which requires to understand what I really believe about myself. Om Shanti. There are just two other things I'd like to add. One of them is related to roles, and the other one is related to where do we get our value from. Many people ask the question, what's my role in service? I believe last night there were some questions about if it's only the daddies and the daddas that get the high statuses and so on. And my particular feeling is not so much that, it's how much you actually are able to move yourself in the direction of serving others. If you are just going around and around and around yourself, you haven't really expanded your influence, your positive influence very much, then of course the result will be that much. So many of us put the cart before the horse. Is the role first, or is our value first, our sense of value first? What comes first? Because if you try to use your role to create your sense of value, it's like putting the cart before the horse. But if you use your value, your real value, to generate your role, then definitely there will be progress. You know, our value does not come from what we do so much as what we are. Therefore, it's not what I have to do, which is the big important question. Of course it's important, but how am I when I'm doing what I'm doing? Because I can be doing great things in the wrong way. It's perfectly possible to be very efficiently wrong. Do everything the best, you know, do everything you had to do, but you did it in the wrong way. So the big question, what comes first? Is it my value, which is like eternal? My value is eternal. It does not change. If I'm working on that, then certainly there'll be places and spaces to use it in. People will come, be attracted to that value, but it's because I'm vibrating on that level, they'll be attracted because of that. So role is secondary to value. Value is the same as worth. So now, where am I building my value from? Is my value numerical, or is my value quantitative? Like, how many people I've served, or how many things I've done, or how many programs I've organized, or how many events I've managed to to participate in? No, that's secondary. It's there's only one source of value for the soul. So it's Baba who makes me valuable, and it's that value that does the service. It's not service that makes me valuable. We're not into, again, you know, forget the marketplace. I've done so much, I've been around for so long, and I've, you know, I look after so many places, and it's more how much love I have is how valuable I am, how much happiness I have, how much peace I can really retain in spite of whatever goes on, how much peace I can keep, how much love I can give, how much happiness I retain, and so on. These are the things that I have to check. You want to check quantity? Check the quantity of your qualities rather than the quality of your quantities. If anyone would like to say anything or ask any question, we can dedicate some time to that. Can we put a microphone on front of the stage? Next time you're having a slight argument with someone, just think about it. You're not arguing with that person. You're arguing with yourself. You're arguing with your own beliefs. And you're not accepting your own value. You're belittling yourself. You try to belittle someone else, you actually end up belittling yourself. You criticize someone else, you criticize yourself. I remember I went to once in the early days when service had first started in Brazil, and there was one particular soul, it was very, very difficult, right? So I went to her and I said, "Daddy, this soul is very, very difficult." I told the whole story. And she said, "Who started service there? Who was the instrument for starting service there?" I said, "Well, I was the instrument." And so she said, "So you're criticizing your own creation?" So if you criticize your own creation, you defame yourself. So stop defaming yourself. After that, I've never criticized anyone else to Daddy. She just turns it against you, right? She refuses to listen to anything bad about someone. So when you see something, you're seeing yourself in that person, you know. When is that penny going to drop? You're seeing what you could have and should have done but didn't. You're seeing your own frustration. You're seeing your version of the person and not the person. And if you go into the avyak stage and you're objective, you won't even see the defect anyway. So, defects are 100%, vision of defects is 100% subjectivity. So anyone like to say anything? I'm just waffling on here. Ask a question or say anything. Comment. Maybe I can ask you a question, you can come to the front and answer it. I'm seeing Neville here. Nev, can I ask you a question?
Sister asked to translate your question. She said how she could actually find out what is peculiar, what is her speciality. One can do this?
To understand your own special speciality, right? Your Baba talks about the dance of sanskars. So some souls have an inclination, a more powerful inclination towards joy, for example. So they like to keep people happy. Another one has a powerful inclination towards love and keeping a loveful atmosphere. Another has an inclination towards silence and peace. So, you know, is the yogi type, which is also essential, right? Others are more service-oriented and, you know, skillful and so on. But our speciality is a special inclination, peculiar, as someone said. And I guess with time it becomes clear, but you can ask yourself a few questions to understand what is it that first attracted you to Gyan. There's probably something, some clue is in that. What are the sorts of people that you like to see doing things? You know, what are they doing when they're doing what they're doing? That you like to see? What's the sort of service that you like naturally to be a part of? So that's you know, the sorts of, what are the sorts of points that call your attention in the Moli? Because if you get everyone's Moli books, notebooks at the end of the Moli and look at them, everyone's noted something different. So why do they note down different things? It's because it's resonating with something in them especially. So there are lots of clues that you can... But you know, speciality is not really related to a technical skill, let's say. I asked this question in Italy. I was visiting in a public program. Does anyone know their specialities? And one guy put it, an old guy, about 80 years old, put up his head and he said, yes, I do. He said, I make great macaroni. And of course, I was in Bologna. Imagine. Spaghetti Bolognese, right? So I said, but why do you do that? And he said, well, I like to gather people together to serve them, you know, big plates of spaghetti. Not the spaghetti that makes his special, not that he's a good spaghetti maker, that's part of it, but it's the love that he has to gather people together that makes him special. So you see, the speciality will be the basis of a skill, if it's a good skill. Let's say you're a good organizer, but why are you a good organizer? Probably you keep on asking why you'll get to the speciality. Why do you like things to be like that? Well, I like things to work. Why do you like things to work? I like it because, you know, it's close. As I like to become perfect, actually. You know? I want to become perfect. So instead of just making something physical perfect, I have to make myself perfect, too. And Nev, back to the question. Even Daddy brought it up in the movie about the pen stopped or one of the meetings. But once you told me that you wanted years ago to write a book, a definitive book about science and, you know, spirituality, but it never really happened because you've got other talents as well, especially, you know, treating people nicely. Now, how did you come to grips with something that you wanted to do and at the same time something that was happening that Baba and Service wanted you to do, which wasn't particularly your inclination? Good question. So, Hope I'm not revealing secrets here.
Actually, the answer that comes to mind is that it's still unresolved. I still carry the idea that one day I might write this book about science and spirituality and how they're coming together. But in the meantime, the drama keeps presenting to me other things, and I do what comes in front. So I enjoy that, and whether that other book ever really happens, I'm not sure. It might not. But in a way, I've just sort of perhaps it's a bit passive. I don't know, but I'm enjoying the scenes that unfold in the meantime very much, and feel also as if perhaps also really I prefer these other things, because I think that more intellectual stuff, you know, because to do that book would require a lot of study. I'd had to read a lot of books about the latest thinking and these sort of things, and maybe I'm letting that side of me fade somewhat into the background, actually, because I used the intellect such a lot in my work for very many years, and perhaps I'm feeling now that that for my development as a yogi and as Baba's child, perhaps I'd rather not have my head in those things. Maybe I'm happier doing things where I'm interacting with others rather than being the hermit in the attic, you know,
working
away with all the books. That's still there, but I think perhaps the drama is being kind to me in not making that happen at the moment. Maybe you could answer the question yourself. I don't know.
Great, peace. Peace, Nev. But it's true, you see, we sometimes have inclinations. That's what I was saying before. We have inclinations, but then reality happens. And, you know, I have to be present. Value is a present thing. What you were or done in the past, finished, you know. You just can't rest on your laurels. And what you may be or may do in the future is not here yet. So value is present. Absolutely present. And present is the present that happens is the real present. And not the present that I'd like to happen or didn't happen and could have happened. So I need to be very, very in touch with what's in front of me. And wisdom is in making the fast adjustment. Actually, wisdom is to adjust to something before it happens even. That's probably the best wisdom. The wisdom that happens slightly afterwards, the thing happened, and then you think, well, I should have done this, I should have said that. It's not really wisdom, it's sort of hindsight. But let me see what's going on in front of me and attend to it in the best possible way, and then the future, whatever it is, will open up, definitely. Value is a present thing. And it's the present that moves forwards. That is the only reality, actually. Okay, let's have some meditation.